This is Danielle Robay from Bookmarked by Reese's Book Club. A new car is kind of like a new book. It takes you places you never thought you could go. What will you drive into the next chapter of your life? It's fun to dream about your next car, but when you're done dreaming, you need to head to cars.com. Cars.com has the tools and expert advice to help you find your dream car. Their advanced search filters allow you to explore 2 million new and used cars so that you can find the perfect car. Start your search with cars.com. Where to next?
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
This is Danielle Robay from Bookmarked by Reese's Book Club. Nothing compares to the anticipation of something new. A new start, a new year, a new home, or a new car. When it's time to get a new car, where do you start? Car shopping can honestly be a little overwhelming, but it should be fun. Buying your next car should be exciting, and it can be, if you remember one thing, cars.com. Cars.com has the tools and expert advice to help you figure out what vehicle is right for you. Their advanced search filters allow you to explore 2 million new and used cars so that you can find the perfect car. The site is so easy to use. Looking for an electric vehicle with a third row and leather seats for easy cleanup? Cars.com has you covered. A variety of tools and badges are used to help shoppers understand the price of a vehicle and find the best deal. And every review is written by a real person, reflecting a real life experience. So don't take any chances. Do car shopping the easy way. Start your search with cars.com. Where to next?
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Welcome to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randall. Dive into the live courtroom drama as we bring you unfiltered audio from one of the most riveting trials of the year. Accused of multiple marital murders, Randall's fate unfolds before us. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. This is Dark Vows.
So probably for the first time, right?
Correct.
And then you went in the house, right?
Well, I'd be one of the four.
Okay. And then
I went in with them.
Other people went in later to clear the house, right?
Yes.
Including canine officers, right?
I believe so.
And according to the CAD report, there's at least two canine units that go in the house, right?
No.
Okay. How many canine units were at the scene?
There were at least two.
Okay. How many went in the house?
At least one.
Okay. And when the canine unit goes in, that's a guy with a dog, right?
Correct.
Okay. Guy has 2 feet, yes?
The guy has 2 feet?
Yes.
Yes.
Dog has 4?
Yes.
Okay. Dog doesn't have any specialized training in preserving a crime scene, right?
No.
Okay. They actually go in the garage, right?
Well, they did. Yes, they did clear the garage when the door opened.
Right. Clearing the garage meaning kind of strategically, like going in, going around, looking, making sure there's no other people there, right?
Yes.
Okay. The reports in the case indicate that there's one lieutenant from patrol on scene, right?
Yes.
And then 2 sergeants, you and another.
Yes.
And then 10 patrol officers.
I'm guessing. I don't know the exact number. I didn't count.
Would it surprise you if there were 10 patrol officers listed as being on scene?
No.
Do you have any idea how many people entered the house that night before you left?
No.
Do you have any idea if it was more than 10?
No.
More than 20?
I'd be surprised if it was more than 20. Are we talking about the initial entry, the clearing of the house, the investigative team?
I'm talking about just while you're there.
While I was there, it was just maybe 4 of us initially. Then there would have been the canine team that cleared it, which might have been, I'm guessing, maybe 4, 3 to 4 officers. And after that, I don't know who went in.
Okay. You know from reviewing the CAD that violent crimes detectives go in, right?
I don't know that they actually went in to the home at that point.
You know that violent crimes detectives were there, right?
I saw major crimes. I don't know if I saw violent crimes.
Same thing, right?
No, they're two different units.
Okay, what's the difference?
Major crimes deals with, it can involve like large larcenies, burglaries, and violent crimes are usually more of crimes against persons. So in this case, yeah, violent crimes, it would have made sense for violent crimes. But major crimes is always, they're not always logged on at the same time. So whatever unit happens to be on, they're kind of like, they're interchangeable in a sense. They can do investigations across whatever their unit's supposed to do.
Okay. As you sit here today, when you reviewed the CAD, you don't know who the detectives were, right?
Like they're like the names of the detectives?
Right.
Not that I remember now.
Okay. If it was memorialized in a report that there were three separate violent crimes detectives there, you wouldn't dispute that?
No.
Okay. And in fact, you know that those detectives request ID to come out, right?
Yes.
And ID's the crime scene analysts?
Yes.
Okay. Were you still there when the crime scene analysts got there?
I don't remember.
Okay. You agree they're not even called until 2200 hours, right?
That's what the CAD said, then yes.
And you have no idea what time they actually arrived? And you have no idea what happens in the scene between the time the CSAs are requested and when they get there, right?
I don't know. What do you mean? Like, I wasn't in the house, so I didn't see what was going on in the house.
Right, precisely my point. Okay, other officers and investigators are going in and out of the house, right?
I don't know. Like I said, I didn't see anybody else going to the house, so I can't really tell you what they were doing.
Okay. You agree you have no meaningful testimony to give about how many people were in the house, right?
Other than the minimum amount that went in.
You actually read the state's testimony.
That might...
It's argumentative.
It's not.
We can observe.
Can you rephrase the question?
How many people were in the house?
At a minimum, I'd say six.
Okay. In total, the whole time in the investigation?
That I don't know.
Okay. In other words, you have no meaningful testimony to give about how many people went in the house that night, right?
Argumentative.
Okay. As you sit here today, you'd agree with me. You can't tell us how many people went in the house that night, right?
Yes.
Okay. You would agree with me that according to the CAD, medical units responded, right?
Yes.
Were you there when they got there?
I don't remember.
They don't get there for a long period of time, right?
I believe that's correct, yeah.
In fact, the CAD even indicates a delay in their response, right?
Yes.
You have no memory whatsoever of them being there.
No, I remember the... I really don't remember what time they got there. But I think I remember... I don't know. Maybe the fire department was there. But
okay. You don't dispute that a number of different medical response units arrived at the scene, right?
I don't know who actually showed up. That's the thing. You know, I don't know.
So to answer my question, you don't dispute that, right?
Correct.
The jury's already seen a number of photographs that show indicia of medical intervention on at least one of the decedents. You wouldn't dispute that that happened, right?
No.
And assuming that that person's still at the scene that they're working on, those medical people are in the scene, right?
Yes.
You don't dispute that at all, right? You would agree with me that very early on in the call, the CAD log indicates that the person responding is asking for advice for his wife, right?
Yes.
Okay. When you read that in a CAD report, obviously the call speaks for itself, but that reads to you that the person reporting is asking for advice on how to treat his wife, right?
Yes.
There's a request for medical indicated in the CAD report at 21:21 hours. Does that sound unusual to you?
No.
Wouldn't you expect medical to respond sooner if the person reporting is asking for medical help with his wife, like immediately in the call?
It kind of depends on the nature of the call. If it's a dynamic call, then medical's not going to be allowed anywhere near the scene, even if somebody's injured.
Okay. Even if the person reporting is saying, will you please get here and help this person? I think she's dying.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, if you're asking for medical, then sure.
And it appears that law enforcement didn't request medical until 36 minutes later. Does that surprise you?
Not in this case.
At 2205 hours, Mr. Hamner, that's the prosecutor, asked you some questions about requesting medical for the PR.
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yes, I remember.
Indicating that the person reporting actually had some type of injury, right?
Yes.
Objection, not speculative.
Well, he said yes, so it doesn't sound like he's speculating.
You know,
certainly
you know that that's what that indicates.
Other than he needs somebody who was with him requested medical for him. And they said he wants to be seen by medical.
So somebody putting information into the computer-aided dispatch system memorializes that the person reporting needs medical attention, right?
Yes.
Pass the witness.
Yes.
He's going to be publishing 325. If we can, I'll just leave it here for a second. Okay, so do you remember at the beginning of cross-examination, there were questions about whether or not you had heard the 911 call. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Okay, so I think the question posed to you was something along the lines of, well, since you didn't hear the call, you didn't hear dispatch tell the person calling to go open the door. Do you remember being asked that on cross-examination?
Yes.
And since you haven't listened to that call, you wouldn't be aware of whether or not the dispatcher said specifically, go open the front door. You wouldn't be aware of that because you haven't heard the call.
Correct.
And then he said twice, go open the front door, right? You didn't hear it because you've never listened to the call.
Correct.
Right? Now, I want to look at, speaking of doors, front door versus garage door. You see this entry here, the 2048?
Okay.
Can you please read that entry aloud, those lines?
It says, 27 suspect is known to PR, has been scamming him. Suspect is laying in garage, not moving. PR locked door, so suspect is locked in the garage.
Okay, so that dispatch reports that the person reporting locked the door to the garage because the suspect would be locked in the garage, correct?
Yes.
So when you went in with your five officers, you went in through the front door?
Yes.
Right? You didn't go through the garage?
Correct, yes.
And you didn't walk down a hallway to a garage, correct? Because you just
correct.
Walked the way out. So publishing 82. You never walked down this hallway out that door, did you?
No.
So you and the other four or five officers didn't trample through that area?
No.
And I mean, I know you haven't been to that side, but you'd have no reason to dispute that that's not the garage door to the garage, correct?
No.
Okay. And if a door is locked, it means that you can't pass through it, correct?
Correct, yes.
So if you wanted to kick something through, you'd run into that door, right?
Yes.
Because the door's locked.
Yes.
Right? And that's what this is reporting here. That the person reporting, calling 911, told 911, I locked the garage door.
Correct.
Right? So it would be impossible for you and your five officers to move anything into the garage because, number one, you didn't go there, right?
Correct.
And that door was locked.
Correct.
Right? Now, when we get to 2117, it's indicating that the doors are opening and that there's a body in the garage. Is that right?
Yes.
Is that a reference to the garage doors opening?
Yes.
Okay. So when K-9 is going in and clearing, they're walking through the garage doors, right?
Yes.
You didn't see any entry from the moment here saying that the garage door is locked. The door to the garage is locked, and then the garage doors themselves kind of lifting up and opening, that someone opened the door from the hallway into the garage. You don't see anything reported on the CAD with respect to that, correct?
Correct.
And your understanding is when K-9 units walked in, they're walking in from the street into the garage.
Yes, correct.
So, where is that pesky photo? Oh, here it is. So, if the door is locked, if that door is locked and the K-9 unit walked in, they'd just be walking in the garage, correct?
Yes.
You don't remember the K-9 unit going through the front door, walking down the hallway, out that door, and then into the garage, correct?
Correct.
So, the K-9 officer's two legs and those dog's four legs wouldn't be traipsing through that area to make it into the garage because they came in literally through the opening of the actual garage doors.
Correct.
The connection compound is ridiculously leading.
Okay, well, he is correct. I'll rephrase. Do you have any recollection of a K-9 unit waltzing through that hallway?
No.
Okay. What is your understanding of when the K-9 unit went in? Did they go through the garage door or did they go through the front door and make their way to the garage?
No, they entered through the garage door.
Okay. You've been doing this for how many years? As a police officer, how many years did you work as a police officer?
29.
How big is it as a priority to keep a scene preserved when there are two bodies inside?
Very important.
Based on your years of doing that, do you guys become more lax in terms of, come on in when there's multiple bodies inside a house, or do you become more concerned about making sure people don't go in?
The second, especially if there's a violent crime, in this case, like a homicide, you've got to be really careful with everything.
And just to be clear, I mean, you're not the only person trained to do that. Are other patrol officers and violent crime detectives and gang detectives taught in the same manner to preserve the integrity of the scene?
Yes.
Do you have any reason to believe that even after you left the scene, that your fellow detectives would then let just countless people waltz through the scene?
Do you have any reason to believe that
the detectives who were there and the officers who were there would just let an inordinate amount of people go waltzing through the scene after you left?
No, that wouldn't happen.
Why not?
Because you could, you can contaminate the crime scene or alter it or...
Okay. So your understanding is there were only... at a minimum, six people when you were there, correct?
Yes.
That went in, right? And just to be clear, when you have an entry here, do you see where it says here? I'll try to zoom in. It says K98 subject in garage, and then it says 583GC interior clear. Is that reporting multiple officers or a singular officer? What do those call signs signify?
K98 is the K9 unit who sees the suspect in the garage deceased, and 583GC is the sergeant who's telling the dispatcher the interior has been cleared.
Okay. I have no further questions on this witness.
Just curious. You ever seen anybody waltz in a crime scene?
Yes.
Waltz?
Well, depending on the crime scene, yes. Okay. I mean, I don't know what you mean by waltz.
You asked the question a bunch of times about whether or not anyone was waltzing through the crime scene. Like a waltz is a dance, right?
It could be, yes.
Yeah. You've seen somebody dance in a crime scene?
No.
Okay. You have no idea how many people passed through that door from the hallway to the garage prior to crime scene analysts getting there, right?
Correct.
You couldn't possibly tell us how many people were in and out of the garage that evening prior to crime scene analysts impounding evidence, right?
Yes.
You know what you did, right?
Yes.
And you know what the officers you were responsible for did, right?
Yes.
There's a lot of people there that night that you're not responsible for.
Correct.
Both people in law enforcement, yes?
Yes.
And some of those people have very different job descriptions than yours, right?
Correct.
Canine units, for example, very different than yours, right?
Yes.
Medical responders, you have no idea how many were in and out of that scene, right?
Correct.
They have much different training than a law enforcement officer, right?
Yes.
They're not so concerned about preservation of a crime scene because they're more concerned about saving a life, right?
Objection calls.
That correct.
Okay. He asked you, he being the prosecutor, in the 29 years that you've done this, like, it's real important to preserve a crime scene in a double homicide, right?
Yes.
For instance, like, if there was a double homicide where there was a crime scene where no blood evidence was documented, and then it was cleaned up, and a week later somebody came back out, that would be a difficult crime scene for a jury to analyze, right?
Objection, that's argumentative.
It's not.
I think it's a David
McKenzie's
he can
answer.
For a jury to analyze?
Yes, he can. He's here to testify to what the jury is going to analyze.
Okay.
Okay. Could you repeat
sure.
all that?
Sure. In a case where there's a double homicide, okay. and at the scene of the double homicide, when crime scene analysts get there, isn't preserved or documented at all, no blood evidence, and then the scene's cleaned. And then a week later, a crime scene analyst comes back out to document blood evidence. That'd be really difficult, right?
Yes.
Because the scene's been contaminated, hasn't it?
Yes.
Nothing else.
Can you follow up on that,
Jim?
Sure. Did Lindsay have any questions for Ms. Witness? Okay. Seeing no response, I'm sorry to excuse. Thank you very much for your testimony today.
You solemnly swear to testimony you're about to give this action will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So I'll be back.
I do.
Thank you. Please be seated. You can state its full name for the purpose. It's Dean, D-E-A-N,
sir, if you could, what did you used to do for a living?
Before I retired, I was a homicide detective with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department.
Okay, what do you do today?
I went back to do cold case homicide investigation back in September of 2015, so coming up on 8 years doing that as well.
All right. How many years before your first retirement with Metro, how many years did you work with Metro?
20 years and 10 months.
Okay. And you may have just said, how many years were you in homicide, not cold case, we'll put that aside for a second, but how many years were you with homicide?
9 years to the day. I retired on my anniversary date.
Okay. If you could, tell me a little bit about some of the training that you have received over your years as a police officer. Well, I know that may sound a little lengthy, but if you could.
Well, in total, the numbers the last time I looked at was over 3,200 hours of training, including the academy. So we've gone through the academy and then field training. And then I also was a bike patrol officer for a couple of years, so there's extensive training there as well. I had, after the 1992 Rodney King riots, I was part of the department's first rifle team where we started carrying patrol rifles. There was 80 hours of training there. I was in the gang unit for 7 years, so I have extensive training in street gangs. We had quite a few conferences. We actually have an advantage here in Las Vegas because everybody comes here to train. So there's a lot of agencies that, you know, will come to various locations in the valley to train. So we get to go and be a part of that sometimes. You know, the department arranges for it, and then other times we'll pay for our own training. So I've done a lot of those conferences, both for gangs, and then when I intended to go into homicide, I did some, I took some courses on homicide investigation, practical homicide investigation through, there was a retired lieutenant commander in New York Police Department that that wrote the book on practical homicide investigation, and he would have an annual conference here every year. I've attended that several times. Just, you know, continuous ongoing education in addition to, you know, reading periodicals and books, and I'm part of the International Homicide Investigators Association as well. California Homicide Investigations would do their annual conference here in Nevada, and I've attended that several times. So it's just as much training as you can get.
Sure. In your career, approximately how many homicide scenes have you gone to?
Over 300.
Prior to that, how many home burglary, home robbery scenes have you responded to in your career?
I really wouldn't be able to give you a number. One of the advantages of working in the gang unit is we investigated the person committing the crime and not the crime itself. So we had that, we could do burglary investigations or credit card fraud investigations or drug investigations. So we had quite a range of experience working in gangs because, again, it's the person and not the crime that's being investigated. So I wouldn't be able to estimate really, but quite a few. Dozens, certainly.
Understood. Tell me a little bit about what firearms training you've received through the course of your life.
So there's the academy firearms training. Well, in the course of my life, I was a military policeman way back in 1981, so I had that training in the military with the .45 caliber handgun back then and the M16, which is the fully automatic version of the what you hear about the AR-15. So I had extensive firearms training there. I was part of the U.S. Army Special Reaction Team, so kind of like the for me, it was Fort McClellan, Alabama, so I was part of their response team, or what you would call a SWAT team, so we did quite a bit of training there. After I left the Army, I was at a nuclear power facility in Arizona, where I was a response team member for a couple of years. Then I was promoted, and I was a response team leader for 5 years before I came here to Metro.
All right. Detective, did you respond to 6517 Rancho Santa Fe here in Las Vegas, Clark County, on May 8th, 2008?
I did.
Around what time do you get to that scene?
About quarter after 10 p.m. is when I responded, when I arrived. I think it's 10:19 to be specific.
All right. If you could, tell me a little bit about the homicide unit. Are you familiar with the term like a squad, a homicide squad?
Correct.
What is that in reference to?
Well, back when this occurred, there were four sergeants over homicide. There were six people on each squad, so I was part of Rocky Albee squad. You had a designated partner that you worked with. My partner was Rob Wilson at the time. He was on vacation when this occurred, so he didn't respond. And then we have two other two-man teams on our squad, and we'd have a rotation that went through all of the squads.
All right. When you arrive, if you arrive to a homicide scene and your group is tasked out there, how do you guys divide up? How's the division of labor work typically?
We take turns as partners. So if you're up in rotation, that means you and your partner are going to catch the next case. And it just flip-flops back and forth between whether you were the person that took the lead last time, and then it would be your partner's turn this time. It's completely random. In this situation, again, my partner was on vacation, so no matter whether it was my turn or not, I was going to be the lead detective on the case.
And who was your partner at that time?
Robert Wilson. We were partners for 7 years total in homicide.
All right. When you get to this scene and you're up and Detective Wilson is gone, what was the responsibility that night for you?
So I was responsible for investigating the crime scene itself. And then there were other detectives that responded to the scene for the briefing initially. So we had Detective Long, we had Detective Mogg, Detective Hardy, all from our squad. And then Sergeant Albee was there. Our lieutenant was there as well.
Let me ask you this. When these multiple members of your homicide squad show up, do they all just start waltzing through the crime scene?
No.
Okay. Do they walk through the crime scene?
No. Initially, we were waiting for every last person who's been assigned to the case to respond. And so I'm not too far from where this occurred. I'm at the west end of Cheyenne, so I was one of the first to arrive. And then we have Detective Long, who's way southeast in the valley. He was the last to arrive, I want to say at around 10:40. So even though I'd gotten there 20 minutes earlier, we wait until everybody's there. The senior crime scene analyst that's going to be on the scene, the CSA and the crime scene analyst supervisor. So we all brief it at once instead of trying to parse it out, you know, one as each person arrives. So we didn't brief until probably, I'd say, a quarter till 11.
And I know you can't speak to what happened from personal knowledge prior to that, but when you're there, from what you could observe, were there a lot of people walking in and out of the crime scene?
No.
Okay. Is there a protocol that Metro puts in place to ensure that doesn't happen?
Yes.
Okay. And as far as you could observe, there were not people going in and out of the crime scene?
There was nobody going in and out of the crime scene.
As the lead detective on this case, if you did see people doing that, would you stepped in and said something?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, around what time do you start doing the processing of the scene?
Well, again, we're going to have that briefing with the initial responding officers. That takes quite a bit of time. And then, although I didn't meet Mr. Randolph on the night that this occurred at the scene, I know that consent to search the house was obtained and given by Mr. Randolph to Detectives Mogg and Hardy before they transported him to out where the Detective Bureau was located at the time, which was Oakey and Decatur, for their interview with him.
Okay, so Detective Mogg and Detective Hardy interview Thomas Randolph on that night?
They did.
And do you see Thomas Randolph in the courtroom today?
I do.
Could you please point out where he is and maybe describe an article of clothing that he's wearing?
He's at the defense table. He's wearing a blue shirt, has short white hair, and he's wearing headphones.
All right. Let the record reflect the witnesses identified the defendant. So is that a factor, for example, going into a home to start processing? Do you need consent or something else before you start going in and processing a scene?
Yes, either a consent or oftentimes that's not even available given the scene, and then a search warrant would be prepared by our sergeant. Telephonic search warrant, we would have a search warrant in hand before we went in to search.
So you said you were provided a briefing from patrol, is that right?
That's correct.
What were the basic details as you understood them before you started the scene walkthrough?
It was Sergeant Darren Densley that gave us the briefing primarily, and he told us that Mr. Randolph had conveyed to them that he was out with his wife earlier in the evening, that they had gone to the charcoal room, which is at the Santa Fe casino, And once they had gotten home from that outing, from the dinner, that Mr. Randolph had pulled up into the drive, that there's not enough room for both people to get out. So his wife got out of the car and walked into the house while Mr. Randolph parked the vehicle in the garage. Then Mr. Randolph had gone into the house. He saw his wife at the opposite end of the north-south hallway there.
Well, it's not beyond the scope of the question, but it is what is basically relayed. I can try to break it up if you'd like. Sure. Where does the defendant say he goes after dinner?
He said that he went home. I don't know if we got that he had gone to the gas station. We learned that later, but he had gone home after dinner.
Okay. And when he arrives home, who does he say enters the house first?
He said his wife got out of the vehicle and walked in so he could park in the garage.
Okay, and then what does he say happened next with respect to him?
He said that he went into the house and that he saw his wife laying face down in the hallway.
Where does he say he goes after that?
He said that he saw some sort of movement, so he went into the office that was right inside the hallway, and he retrieved a handgun from a hanging shoe rack and then came back out into the hallway.
Okay. Does he see someone when he starts to make his way out of the hallway?
He said that he basically was confronted by a man wearing a ski mask in the hallway that they collided in the doorway.
What does he say he does to the man in the hallway?
He said that he shot him several times.
Okay, until in the hallway?
In the hallway. And then when he went to the...
Back to this main hall, hearsay. At this point, he's describing a briefing, and I believe we're going to hear another statement today. And so him just giving a rendition of what he thinks was said, I mean, we've already heard the statements, and so I would object to hearsay.
Your Honor, it's not being... Sure.
You're listening to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph. There's more raw courtroom drama ahead as we bring you unfiltered audio from trial. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a minute. More Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph, next.
This is Danielle Robay from Bookmarked by Reese's Book Club. Nothing compares to the anticipation of something new. A new start, a new year, a new home, or a new car. When it's time to get a new car, where do you start? Car shopping can honestly be a little overwhelming, but it should be fun. Buying your next car should be exciting, and it can be, if you remember one thing, Cars.com. Cars.com has the tools and expert advice to help you figure out what vehicle is right for you. Their advanced search filters allow you to explore 2 million new and used cars so that you can find the perfect car. The site is so easy to use. Looking for an electric vehicle with a third row and leather seats for easy cleanup? Cars.com has you covered. A variety of tools and badges are used to help shoppers understand the price of a vehicle and find the best deal. And every review is written by a real person, reflecting a real life experience. So don't take any chances. Do car shopping the easy way. Start your search with Cars.com. Where to next?
Hey, this is Kevin.
This is Joe.
And Nick Jonas from Hey Jonas. This episode of Hey Jonas is brought to you by the all-new drink lineup at McDonald's.
I don't have to tell you that there are already so many great drink options at McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But the new drink lineup, I mean, it takes things to another level.
They've got delicious caffeinated refreshers like the Strawberry Watermelon Refresher, crafted sodas like the Sprite Berry Blast, and now the all-new Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer. We're talking about a total game changer. Made with Red Bull that's mixed with blue raspberry flavor and topped with freeze-dried dragon fruit.
Wow.
McDonald's has given us a refreshing new boost for your day.
And the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer is arriving just as you're heading back to the dorms for the fall semester. It's got a boost of energy and a kick of flavor when you need it the most. You know, powering through those lectures and studying sessions, you're going to need it. Kicking the afternoon slump or rallying for the weekend.
Try one of the many new drinks like the Red Bull Dragonberry Energizer, also available with Red Bull Zero, now at McDonald's.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold, win big.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. The agents wrote the copy and managed the timelines, while our human creative director made sure it all made sense. Easy. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Every friend group has that one person who puts their card down for brunch and sends the Venmo request.
If that's you and your Venmo balance is poppin', you need a Venmo debit card so you can spend your balance instantly. No transferring anything, no waiting around.
So as soon as you get paid back for brunch, you can pay for those concert tickets you've been eyeing or put it toward your next night out.
Plus, there's no monthly fee or minimum balance.
Learn more about the Venmo debit card at venmo.com/card. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank, N.A., ID verification required.
Capture your favorite summer feeling with Pandora Jewelry. Discover a collection inspired by the sunshine, freedom, and moments that make the season unforgettable. From sun-kissed medals to personalized pieces ready to be engraved with your summer mantra, each design moves with you. From beach days to golden nights and every memory in between. Shop Pandora Jewelry's new summer collection in-store or online at Pandora.net and let your summer unfold.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.